We would love it if you would go to donate.npr.org/happy and support your local station and also support our show. We'll tell you more later. Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. Now and then, something very creepy happens that involves technology, and people say, that sounds like an episode of Black Mirror. What is Black Mirror? It's an anthology series that started on British television and is now produced by Netflix. It tells stories about identity, privacy, and security, but also humanity and love. Black Mirror's fourth season, a set of six new stories, has just come out on Netflix. And today on Pop Culture Happy Hour, we're talking about the intrusive, the invasive, and the intense world of Black Mirror. Before we get started, let's meet the panel. With me is Glenn Weldon from the NPR Arts Desk. Hey, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
Also here in D.C. is D.C. theater and film critic Chris Klimek. Hey, Chris.
Hi.
And joining us from New York is the co-host of the podcast, The Nod, from Gimlet Media, Brittany Luce. Great to have you back, Brittany.
Great to be back.
So I want to ask each one of you first. I'm going to ask Glenn first. Uh-huh. What was your favorite episode of the ones that you saw? There are six.
Yep. It's not the one you think.
No.
It's not the USS Callister, which is the Star Trek riff.
Yeah.
It is Hang the DJ, which is the closest the show will ever come to a rom-com.
Yeah.
And I dug it so much.
Do it.
That episode is so smart about relationships. Yada, yada, yada. There's some science fiction in there, too.
Yeah, it's true. All right. How about you, Chris? Favorite?
You know, I haven't disliked any of them. I've watched five of the six.
Uh-huh.
I think I'm going to talk about the one I watched most recently, which is Metalhead.
Metalhead. A black and white kind of semi
sort
of horror-y, monster-y.
Mysterious, apocalyptic.
Yeah.
It's the leanest of them. It's about 40 minutes long. I like that it posits some scary circumstances in the world that are not elucidated at all. There is one very specific threat that introduces all sorts of questions. But it's completely effective. It's gripping.
How about you, Brittany? Favorite?
It's a toss-up between USS Callister and Hang the DJ.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But since Glenn already mentioned Hang the DJ, I'm going to go with USS Callister. I thought it worked on so many different levels. And, like, I just thought it was just really good storytelling. I was just, like, really, really engaged the entire time. The tension worked for me the entire time. And also, I kind of fell in love with some of the characters.
Yeah. I would have said, you know, that same toss-up. I think the toss-up for me was between USS Callister and Hang the DJ. Hang the DJ is a story about a relationship and kind of about a dating app ish world, but something kind of more profound than
that. I thought
that.
Of The Lobster a little bit, that movie which we've
Me
discussed.
Too. Where, Me too.
Yeah. You pair up or you're turned into an animal.
Yeah. So it's sort of about kind of the imposition of technology on the idea of destiny, which is so prominent in romantic tropes. And then USS Callister, as Glenn said, is kind of a Star Trek, not a kind of a Star Trek riff. It is a Star Trek riff.
Direct Star Trek riff.
It then, you know, becomes not only, I think, very smart about tropes of science fiction, but also very timely.
Yeah.
It's very of the moment in a very particular way that's hard to explain other than by saying it talks a lot about power structure in an idea like Star Trek, where you have a captain and a bunch of people who admire him. You ultimately get a lot of kind of examination of how that power structure would play out.
Yeah, Star Trek is particularly ripe for this kind of examination because it's always cited as having been progressive in its time.
Right.
But those progressive for 1966 episodes look pretty archaic now.
Well, right, particularly because they have such a concentrated power structure, which is part of what USS Callister is
Special
about.
Shout out to Jesse Plemons.
Yeah, so good.
For resembling Glenn Weldon to distracting degree.
No.
I'm not going to take that. Just for doing a Shatner that is not Kevin Pollak's Shatner, which everybody does.
Yeah.
It's invaded the culture. He has found a different register, a different tone, and he nails it. And he's also giving a real performance. Like he's not just doing a bit.
So good.
It's so many. There's so many layers to this. Another Kristen Milioti is so good in that. I didn't realize that what the Star Trek universe needs every so often is the occasional eye roll. But every time it would happen, because you're doing that at home. It's just doing what we've all been doing. I think that
episode in particular also really has several actors. Plemons is one. Yeah. Krista Milioti is one. Michaela Cole is one.
Yes.
Who they are doing and have done in the last year or two a bunch of different interesting things. And I think those are all three actors where every time I see them, I sort of say, well, this will be something interesting because they tend to do something interesting with whatever they're given. You know, Jesse Plemons is in The Post, which is coming out right now as kind of prestige Spielberg, the Spielbergiest prestige Spielberg.
Right.
But also is doing this kind of really weird, offbeat, you know, piece of work. But I think Michaela Cole is one of those people. We talked about Chewing Gum, the show that she made a couple seasons of.
Yeah.
And I think I'm starting to see her like pop up in other different kinds of things, and it makes me super happy.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about your USS Callister thoughts, Brittany.
I have not seen more than like four episodes of Breaking Bad, and I've never seen Friday Night Lights, so I had never seen Jesse Plemons before.
Yeah.
And I was like, who is this great undiscovered actor? This guy is a genius. His performance was so good. He was so convincing on so many levels. It reminded me of, there was this really popular story in The New Yorker. Well, I don't know if it was popular like in the world, but it was popular among like a lot of my colleagues in New York, called Cat Person.
Yep.
Was about a very particular type of guy that you encounter regularly in life as a woman. And so much of Jesse Plemons' performance reminded me of Notes of Cat Person and just how real he was.
He's played a lot of creepers.
He's played a lot of creepers. Yeah. So I was like, that's sort of the bucket that I put him in and in that episode. And I was just really impressed with how, like, I don't know, with some of the range of as far as like in performance that I got from some of the actors and the characters throughout such a short piece.
Yeah.
And also too, like, I loved what it had to say about power. I thought it was so interesting.
Yeah.
It was so satisfying. And just the storytelling, the way that the story unfolded, it was so complex. I think it was an hour and 16 minutes.
Yeah.
And like all of it was deserved. It had my attention for every single scene.
Yeah.
The entire way through.
This show is four seasons in now, and it's taught us how to watch it, which is from a defensive crouch, because we know it's going to get bleak. And sometimes the fun of an episode is, where does the tech come in? I haven't seen any tech yet. Where's the tech? It's got to be some tech. It is an anthology series. It's a genre anthology series, which means generally they like to teach tidy moral lessons, right? In a horror anthology, you get a moral failing caused by moral comeuppance.
Yeah.
And that's here. But this show is so much interested in world building, but not in the kind of, you know, fantasy world building, but like in actually fully imagining how the tech du jour, du episode, will change the world. Not necessarily in huge ramifications, but in just like slightly smearing today's reality, like ahead 5 years. It's just so smart. So if science fiction can be thought of as a pair of running shoes, hear me out.
Okay. I'm with it.
I'm going someplace with this, counselor. Some writers and filmmakers just slap on the shoes and start running because they think what we are interested in is the running.
Yeah.
This show, for example, slips its foot in and then sort of wiggles the toes.
Yeah.
So it really gets comfortable because it wants to, like, for example, if it posits that a world exists where insurance companies can get access to your memories, as is true in the episode Crocodile, another science fiction writer would say, that's it. All those rights went away. Don't worry about it. This show is really interested in how we got from here to there, right? It's interested in, there would be some legal wrangling. People don't surrender their rights. It's a slow process. We know that very well. And this show is about all the subtle, tiny ways that whatever it's positing will change, will ripple, will affect how people interact. It's just so smart about that. That's the thing I love about it.
I think there are some of these that you could do without a speculative tech in the middle. And I'm thinking of the episode that Jodie Foster directed, Archangel, where Rosemary DeWitt plays this overprotective or maybe not overprotective parent who installs this surveillance system within her daughter, basically. You know, and how this changes their relationship as the daughter grows from childhood to adolescence. And you, I think, could tell this story without that tech. You don't need that device because it's really about the erosion of trust.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and maybe that's what makes a slightly, you know, second tier Black Mirror episode and distinguishes it from one of the, you know, the truly outstanding ones.
Yeah. The reason why that one, I think, was the least successful for me is that I thought what it had to say, not just about the invasiveness of tech, but also about people and the way people are, was the least surprising and interesting. It was the least bold to me as far as what it was saying. Because I do feel like not only could you tell that story, that kind of story about the erosion of trust and overprotectiveness with parents, but I think people have told similar stories.
Yeah.
And so that was the one I think was the least interesting. Whereas, you know, Glenn brought up Hang the DJ. It does have those romantic comedy rhythms, but it also is really full of ideas about romantic certainty and uncertainty and the role that uncertainty plays and the critical role in some ways that uncertainty plays.
To return to Archangel, I think it's, the total number of Black Mirror episodes produced so far is what? It's like, it's about 20, right? Because there was a one-off
like
Christmas special with John
Hamm.
And I think we do kind of see it start to recycle a little bit there. There was a first season episode called The Complete History of You, which is basically the same scenario within a romantic relationship instead of a parental relationship. And that one, I think, was better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we mentioned Metalhead. This show is about tech, but it also uses tech in a really good way. Those CGI dogs looked so real.
Are you sure they're CGI? Real.
I'm not. I think in many cases, I'm sure there's actually an object there.
They looked, and I mean, the fact that it's black and white makes it harder to tell, and the fact that they're sort of chrome, but no,
I think it masks some of the effects. But I think it's a really smart decision.
Even if they were CGI, the fact that it has that, that it looks a little bit like stop motion, and something about stop motion animation, even when it's the California Raisins, is just terrifying to me.
Yes.
So that's why I was watching that one through my fingers. Covering my eyes.
Black Museum. That was okay. Liked it. I was talking to Chris about this, and he said that was remarkably pulpy.
It was, yeah. I mean, I think like it's the guy takes a drill to someone's face, and so like I wouldn't put that one in the highbrow.
It's Twilight Zone-y,
thoughtful.
What do you got, Brittany?
That one in its construction reminded me a lot of White Christmas, and I think that ultimately White Christmas is a better episode, but Black Museum. It's like hard. It's I will say that like there is a specific element of the episode that I found personally very gratifying, but I don't know if necessarily that makes for this episode being one of my favorite Black Mirror episodes or even one of the best of the bunch. It was definitely pulpy. I think that, but I got the sense that that was like a stylistic decision just based upon even the main guy, Rollo, the actor who played him. All of his choices were very. Could have been like a villain in Planet Terror.
Right. Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, so it's just kind of like, okay, yes. I think that this is, I don't want to give away too much, but like the general setting of the episode is in somewhere in the desert in the American West.
Yeah.
Even that felt like a really specific type of decision.
Mm-hmm.
When really like, that location could have moved, but like I felt like there were certain decisions that were made in the direction of that episode that meant that it was supposed to be pulpy on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I found elements of it extremely, extremely satisfying, especially like there were parts of the episode where I was kind of like, where is this going? I'm not really comfortable with this. Like, I definitely got like sick to my stomach. My boyfriend and I were like, I don't know about this. But then, things kind of got righted. But I would say that episode, I think for me, it was kind of told vignette style. And I sort of felt like, 2 out of 3 of the vignettes featured actors that I found less compelling than the actors that were in the actual scene.
Yeah. I do think it's the bluntest
of
the kind of the mind control sort of stories.
Yeah.
I think it's because the whole season has a lot of stuff about sort of surveillance and being able to get in somebody else's.
I think what I meant by pulpy about that one is that it just uses that flashback structure, which is very common to like Tales of the Crypt and, just horror anthologies in general. And it is very discursive. One of the vignettes has a credit that it was based on a story by Penn Jillette.
I saw that!
Which is strange, right? Mm-hmm. That you wouldn't either build that into an episode on its own or just figure out, well, I have to shoehorn it into this other thing. I think it's modular in a way that, I don't know, maybe I am underestimating Charlie Brooker by saying this, but I do feel like if for some reason you had to turn that 70-minute episode into a 45-minute episode, you could start jettisoning vignettes, and maybe you could get away with it.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that Pendulette story, that little vignette, wasn't a full episode because it just couldn't sustain it. I mean, it's just that's entirely possible.
Right.
That episode, Black Museum, has a lot of little Easter eggs referring back to other episodes. So you can go into this and see it in any order, but I would recommend saving Black Museum for last. Every season has a breakout episode, right? The first season, the breakout episode was the very first, the Prime Minister and the Pig, and it was kind of a mission statement, right? It said, like, we're prepared to go this far. Second season, I don't really remember. Third season was, of course, San Junipero, about the couple. And again, that is another example, like Hang the DJ, where it's science fiction, not science fiction, right?
Yeah.
It's more, it's touching the science to get a little energy off of it, but it's really about two people. And so that's why I predict, even though the USS Callister has had all the advance hype and it's got all the bells and whistles and certainly looks expensive as hell, and it's got great acting, I think the breakout episode of this season is definitely going to be Hang the DJ.
Interesting. What do you think, Brittany?
Well, romantic comedies are my favorite genre of film, I think. So I already have a soft spot for Hang the DJ, but also I just found the actors so charming.
Me too.
I found them so charming. Georgina Campbell is adorable. Joe Cole, like, their chemistry was really, really good.
Yeah.
And also, like, I still felt hopeful, which is, like, such a rare feeling when watching Black Mirror.
The other thing it has in common with San Junipero is it's kind of hopeful. Ending. How it's alone in the season for being something close to uplifting.
Well, I think that you can say that on Black Mirror and maybe in the mind of Charlie Brooker, like, they don't believe in a lot of things that are hopeful.
Yeah.
They believe a lot of things about humanity that are very, very bleak. But believe in individual personal relationships being meaningful. Do you know what I mean? Like, on the micro level, kind of believes in human beings loving each other, but on the macro level has no faith in humanity at all.
Yeah. I mean, I think San Junipero and Hang the DJ are both great episodes. I think San Junipero particularly would not have had quite the impact that it had had the show's brand for sort of cruel, dismal irony right at the end having been so firmly established,
because
that one really subverts an expectation that the show, you know, had up to that point worked really hard to build.
Yeah.
I mean, final word on Hang the DJ. Rom-coms are not my thing. Good writing, good performance is. Watch the first 30 seconds of their interaction. I knew at that moment I'm going to like these characters. These characters have chemistry. I'm going to want to see what happens to them.
Yeah.
It's just fantastic writing, really good acting, all in the first 30 seconds. It just happens.
Very, very good. All right. 6 episodes of Black Mirror have just dropped. We will be curious to hear what you think about them. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet at us at PCHH. It is time for our favorite segment, What's Making Us Happy This Week? Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
I had a board game weekend this weekend. 5 different games, and because you're stuck at home probably with your family still because it's still the holidays, then here's 5 different recommendations. First, a shout out to Labyrinth Games here in DC. The very kind people hooked me up. Mysterium, which has been recommended on the show before by one Margaret H. Willison, is kind of Clue. If Clue were fun, you're trying to convey to the investigators through pictures. A lot of fun, a lot of setup, a lot of really big logistical setup, but you can't play it with just 3 people. You need more. That's the conclusion. Evolution is a very smart game where you try to grow a species and give it all kinds of traits, and it adapts, and you attack other species. Very smart game. Too smart for me. Too many rules, conditional rules, sub-rules that you have to kind of keep track of, especially if you enjoy the occasional postprandial tipple, as I do. It's not a game to start and not know how to play after dinner, after you've had a few. It bested me. We didn't even get through the game. Splendor is a game where you are a gem merchant and you have to earn prestige from passing nobles. Very simple, very straightforward, quick to learn. It's lying to you because it has all this bells and whistles about how it's about gems. It's really just math. This game is secretly math. No, thank you. Jiraku. It's another one of these games where every round has 5 phases and you're like, oh, just too many phases. But once you master the logistics, it's a lot of fun. You're a warlord in Japan. You're trying to get to Kyoto with your samurais and the ninjas. Chris was not a fan because he said somebody found a way to make ninjas boring. But I still think it's great. And by far the best, the one that won the weekend, is called Love Letter. It's a card game where you play different nobles and you have to interact with each other. It is so easy to pick up and play. It is so fun and it is so over quickly. That's also all important. So Love Letter, pick it up.
Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Chris Klimek, what is making you happy this week?
Well, Linda Holmes, I am a 12 Days of Christmas person. Mm-hmm. And when this drops on December 29th, listeners, according to the metric system, will have 8 days remaining to delight in my Christmas mixtape.
Yay!
When people come up to me and they say, Chris, you are like the Alan Lomax of Christmas. You are the girl talk of the holidays. I blush a tasteful seasonal crimson and I say, yes. Yeah. I have lamented in print about our failure to replenish the holiday pop canon in a timely manner, so every year I try to do my part by digging up the strangest historical specimens that I can find. Possible my MacArthur Fellowship has gotten lost in the mail or something.
Mm-hmm, I figure.
But like John McClane at Nakatomi Tower, I persist. Oftentimes, it turns out that history rendered a just verdict when it selected these songs for extinction, but that is for the long-distance Haldeckers and merrymakers in our audience to decide. So, here is a supercut of some of the wonders and horrors that await you on this year's tape.
You're the very doll I want for Christmas. One that gives real kisses and breathes sighs.
Wow.
I don't want another single thing for Christmas. I'll take one of you in every sight.
Oh, boy.
You see, I realize it's Christmas time. Yeah. And that's when every man wants to be with his woman.
Hey.
Oh, boy.
Amid the glistening snow, a riding we will go. It's Christmas time in Canada, we want you all to know.
32 feet and 8 little tails they fly. Faster, faster, faster through the sky.
Good Christmas love all night long. Oh.
Only 88 seconds left.
Oh, come on and let me ride that sleigh, cause I know you want it.
Oh,
yeah. I've got Christmas tree lights in the top of my truck, cause that's where I'll be Christmas.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, klingt es fein und breit. Schön ist eine Schlittenfahrt im Winter, wenn es schneit. Jingle bells, jingle bells, klingt es fein und breit.
All right, listeners, you have there, in order of appearance, Marty Robbins, Marvin Cease, Wilf Carter, Gene Autry, making a third failed attempt to three-peat after Rudolph, and here comes Santa Claus with the all-timer non-hit, 32 Feet, 8 Little Tails, followed by H-Town, Knockin' Boots for Christmas, Red Simpson, and then the Gunter Kallman Choir to shut it down. That is my 2017 mixtape. Get it at an internet near you.
All right. Thank you very much, Chris Klimek. Brittany Luce, what is making you happy this week?
I don't know if I have anything half as exciting as what Chris just brought us, but I saw Coco a couple of weeks ago.
Nice.
Me and my co-host at The Knot, Eric, he has like a daughter, so he's like more in, and he like likes cartoons, so he's like more into like what cartoon movies are out. I personally, me myself, I didn't really like cartoons that much when I was a kid, and I really don't like them as an adult at all. But he wanted to see Coco. He fought for it, so he went to see Coco. I cried the entire time. I absolutely loved it. I would watch it again in a heartbeat. If I could manage, I'd probably watch Coco once a week. I have not been able to shut up about it. But something that I have really been enjoying is this soundtrack. The soundtrack to Coco has all of these songs that are in Spanish or that are like pop versions of songs that are in the movie that didn't make it into the U.S. film but are on the soundtrack, and they are amazing. I don't speak Spanish, but I can understand bits of it. Like, I can understand a lot of things in Spanish if they are like said slowly enough, which is why music is great.
Nice.
Because people sing much slower than they talk.
Mm-hmm.
And the Spanish versions of the songs are gorgeous.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, everyone, including Brittany Luce on the Coco soundtrack. What is making me happy this week? I have been checking out the Amazon series, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which is done by Amy Sherman-Palladino, who you might know from a little show, The Gilmore Girls, or Bunheads, which, by the way, if you love Bunheads, it's on Hulu now, mm-hmm. so you can check out Bunheads. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is about a woman in the 1950s whose husband, who her marriage breaks up, and she decides to become a stand-up comedian. I don't love everything about it. It definitely has strengths and weaknesses, I think. But it is a little different for Amy Sherman-Palladino. It's not quite as burbly dialogue driven. It still has her kind of energetic dialogue, but it's not quite so cute dialogue driven. And I say that with great love. And I really like the performance of Rachel Brosnahan, who plays the central character.
Star.
She's wonderful. Yeah. Mm. And they are playing some really interesting music in this show, some of which is stuff that is way too corny for most people, but that I really love. There's one episode where they play a Barbra Streisand performance of the extremely offensive Cole Porter song, Come to the Supermarket in Old Peking,
Oof, yes.
which I never get to listen to because the lyrics are terrible and cringeworthy, but it is also Cole Porter being really good at writing lyrics and Barbra Streisand at the time, in like the 1960s, being great at this kind of singing. You're better off listening to her do Don't Rain on My Parade. but it's an interesting musical kind of artifact, and it's really a lot of fun. So Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, streaming on Amazon, from the mind of Amy Sherman Palladino and the brilliant central performance of Rachel Brosnahan. So that is what is making me happy this week. Before we go, thanks to all of you who have already been to donate.npr.org/happy. We want more of you to go to donate.npr.org/happy. That's how you support your local public radio station and also support our show. Throw us a tweet. Tell us why you gave. Use the hashtag #WhyPublicRadio. It means a lot to us, and we really, really thank you for that support. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can find me at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Glenn at GH Weldon. You can follow Chris at CT Klimek. And you can follow Brittany at BM Luce. That's BMLUSE. You can follow our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy. And our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music that you are bobbing your head to right now. Thanks so much to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we will see you all back here next week.